Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Gareth Greenaway joins me. We're going to be talking about GNU Health, the full management system for clinics and health institutions and hospitals and stuff, used all around the world already. It's pretty amazing. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Gareth Greenaway. Episode 288, recorded March 19th, 2014. GNU Health. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week, or as often as I can, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, the projects you may have never heard of, the projects you may be using every day and not being aware of it. This week is no exception, but first let me bring on my co-host, Gareth Greenaway. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Randall. Glad to be back.
And you're probably speaking to us from your usual secret bunker in Thousand Oaks or somewhere over there?
Right, exactly. Deep underground, Scale headquarters, here for another 6 months until Scale 13.
Nice. Yeah. So you just stay there the entire time until the big doors open and then let you out to go to the...
Out once a year.
Very cool. Very cool. And for those of you watching the video, you may recognize a slight background change for me. I'm over at Captain Neil Bauman's house in Pasadena. I'm working for him intensely this week and next week, and so you'll probably see me from here next week as well. But I do have my Big Blue Yeti Pro, and I have the Fez, of course, so I'm all set for a show. This week's show is pretty special. I'm really looking forward to this one. We have a couple of guests on, Gabrielle Brenez and Louise Falcon. They're going to talk to us about the GNU Health Project, which, as far as I understand, standard from looking at my brief experiences of going over the website, is a hospital or clinic management system. So it's top to bottom, comprehensive health records, billing, scheduling, all sorts of things like that. And it's already won the Free Software Foundation's award. We'll have to get the guests to talk specifically what that means. But it looks pretty interesting. It looks pretty significant. So what do you know about this so far?
Exactly what you have looked at as well. From what I looked at briefly, it does look like an open source system for managing hospital records. So like everything from patient records to hospital general information. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to hear about it though, because I think this is one area where open source software could definitely be a huge benefit.
Without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our first guest, Gabrielle Brenez. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Randall. Hello, Gareth, and hello, everyone out there listening.
Very cool. Very cool. And a few people watching, but most people do actually just listen. So, because they're listening to us in their cars or while they're running on the track or whatever they want to do. So, and where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you right now from Buenos Aires, Argentina. So it's around noon for ourselves, 12:30, mm-hmm. actually. And I'm Costa Rican, so excuse my accent sometimes.
Oh, it's a lovely accent. I could sit and listen to South American people all day, but I don't have the time to do that. I was actually just in Buenos Aires. I was finishing up a cruise that came around South America and got to see some of the tango dancing there, which is really, really amazing.
Did you get to practice some tango yourself?
A little bit on the ship. There was actually a couple of world-class tango competition people there, and they were doing dance lessons. So I actually tried a little bit of it and realized that that is not something I'm ever going to be an expert at. So this isn't This Week in Tango or This Week in South America. This is Floss Weekly. So why don't you give us the 30,000-foot view of what GNU Health is about, and tell me if I got it mostly accurate.
Well... pretty much, yes. We try to go a little bit further than just a medical record system, and that's quite a bit one of the wonders, so to say, from GNU Health. We got like three layers. The first one does have to do with medical records from when you register a patient and keeping all those things digital. But we try to go one step further, and that begins when we conceive the patient as not just like this cumulus of symptoms or this sick body that shows up at a hospital or a healthcare center, but a person, and try to get to know him or she, get to know her in her lifestyle, if she or he has access to water, to electricity, if the conditions they live in mostly, if they have college education, if they are exposed to some sort of contamination. And that's some sort of things that most information systems, hospital information systems, don't take into account, neither in the FLOSS world or in the private world. So that's one of the first wonders of Eugenia Hill from my point of view. And from that on, when you get to know the patient from that perspective, it aids a lot in the next steps when you register him to your center, when you treat him in your center. And of course, we deal with the whole administrative part of healthcare centers. That means the billing part, the surgery planning, the bed planning, how you're going to arrange your beds at a hospital, if you have to administer this pill to that patient, how often you have to do that, how do you register rounds, medical rounds. But there's a third layer, and that's pretty cool too, actually, from my point of view as well. And that has to do with the health information system. And it does go a long way in terms of reporting of epidemic planning. If here in South America, and when I come from Costa Rica, we suffer a lot from tropical diseases, from epidemic sprees. And there are a few softwares out there that actually help you to track that, help you to track the vector that actually spread the disease in the first place. And with Genome Health, you can do that. So not only can you geolocate the patient's residence, or what we like to call, it's like a human dwelling, and we call it a domiciliary unit, DUs. Mm-hmm. And that way you can, for example, let's take a hotel here in Buenos Aires. When you came from your trip to Buenos Aires, you registered at a hotel, and you came in sick with some infectious disease, and unfortunately, you spread that disease all over Buenos Aires, and we can track you back to your hotel and then let that hotel know, hey, there was a person in your institution, your hotel, that suffered from this disease. It was contagious, so be on the lookout for more cases in your hotel. And it also serves a lot for governments. If you know that, I don't know, the mostly have 50% of your female patients with diabetes happen to have only school education, sixth grade education, then it helps you also plan your communications campaigns, and it helps you know better your audience and then try to connect better with them. So I think that that's one of the areas that stand out from GNU Health, besides everything related, as I said before, with medical records, with the registering patient in your center, with all those most administrative things. That there are a lot of good softwares out there that do the same thing, but none of them, from my perspective, consider the patient as a whole in this whole process of the patient in his or her environment.
Wow. Okay. What a great answer. It's like Gareth and I were just chatting that maybe we could just go away and just let you finish the show. But thank you. Thank you for that. But there's so many questions that came out of that. For one, now I'm jealous. I live in the U.S., which claims to have a pretty decent health system, but in fact is probably one of the most backwards health systems in the world. And part of that is that there's absolutely, I feel like I'm only a number to my insurance company, and then also to the doctors I end up seeing. I'm just, patient 47 on the day's roster. And it sounds like with GNU Health, you've been able to sort of break those barriers down. Do you think it's because of the difference in culture where GNU Health was originated?
I think it depends a lot from where it came from. It didn't come from a mind that it was trying to profit from that, or that was trying to make the system more profitable, so to speak. Luis Falcón, the creator of GNU Health, the original developer of it, wanted to serve emerging economies first and to help in like primary healthcare at first. It did grow a long way more than that, but at first it was meant to serve primary healthcare. And as I said, it depends a lot of what kind of medicine you want to practice. If it's just a business to you and you just want to treat your hospital, your clinic as an enterprise, that's okay. But your patient will be a client and not a patient. And in Costa Rica, it's the same thing. There are a lot of healthcare centers now that consider, or they actually refer to patient as user or client directly, not even patient. So it's a lot from the concept that you start from. The good thing about the U.S. system that has to do with GNU Health is you have the social security number, so that for informatics, it does help a lot not to duplicate your information, your data, when you enter a patient. But aside from that, it's sad because, as I said, there are a lot of diseases that have to do, yes, with medical symptoms, but have to do a lot more with your context, with where you live, with the social part of medicine, not only the biological part. So I think it comes from more from that, from how you view medicine and how you want to practice it. Because, well, Genome Health also has the ERP part, the enterprise resource planning part that is based in Triton, also a very valuable flaw solution for those out there who want to try it. And we do consider that part because we know hospitals have to run themselves somehow, and you have to have a billing side, and you have to live from that. I mean, we live also from the healthcare industry, so to say, but there are many ways of going around that, and patients are still people, and that's one of the differences. And I wouldn't like to have a system that only considers patients as just a number. It's just it I don't know, it looks like the human part of the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I've experienced that for pretty much all of my, you know, half a century on the planet. So I know exactly what that's like to feel like that. I think you alluded a little bit to this, but let's scroll back in time a little bit. What triggered GNU Health being built, and how long has it been around, and how mature is it at this point?
It's been around since 2006, specifically as GNU Health. Before that, it was called Medical, and it was based in an open ERP. You might have heard of that platform as well. The whole idea itself came when Louis was here, and he's a health informatics person, but he happens to be a doctor as well, a physician. And he was doing some voluntary work here in a rural province of Argentina. And he was just like programming, installing some office packages. And it really killed him to see how people would walk 3, 4, 6, 10 miles just to get to a clinic and just to get like an aspirin, not even a big procedure, just like an aspirin for something, or to get a walk, I don't know, 5 miles with a broken foot, just hop those 5 miles just to get treated. And when he came back to Buenos Aires, he decided it was high time that he needed to do something about it. And that's when he started developing GNU Health. One of the good things is that in his head, I value the fact that he's both a doctor and an IT person. So you get those two views in one same package. So we started working with OpenERP, but they unfortunately changed their flaws ways, so to say. And we don't negotiate with health. I mean, I understand there are a lot of people out there. You're entitled to have your own business model, but we had a very unnegotiable misunderstanding with OpenERP because they wanted to start charging for updates, and that's pretty much against everything we are for in the FLOSS world. So we broke every single tie with them, and then Medical became GNU Health, and we migrated the whole thing in like 24, 28 hours. He migrated Medical to GNU Health, that's based now in Triton. And then we started growing. At first, it was just software for dealing with primary healthcare. And then we started adding more specific modules that had to do with the ERP part. And as Triton evolved, we evolved with them. And, well, right now, we are very proudly to say that there's a whole country starting using GNU Health. Jamaica, in September 2013, started using or implementing GNU Health for their entire healthcare system. So that's how big and how specific at the same time we have been growing. And it has been a really positive experience because we have managed to create specific modules for very specific diseases like dengue, like malaria, like Chagas disease, and at the same time be universal enough so that Louis can implement it, GNU Health in Laos, 2 weeks ago, and we are still working in Jamaica today, and tomorrow we're going to go to Chile and work there. So it's pretty cool.
What's it like when you're able to come into a government organization or maybe even an NGO that's trying to get this to get going and say, we've got a top-to-bottom solution for clinics and hospitals everywhere, and it's free, and it's community-supported, and we can add features as you need them? What's it like, the kind of reaction you get when you're talking to people like that?
Skepticism is the first yes that you do.
I can imagine. Say,
when there's something that sounds too good to be true, it usually is too good to be true. And sometimes, and I imagine you have treated this topic before as well, we floss advocates tend to sound very idealistic, or we come across as a very idealistic, very utopian kind of people, and that everything we believe in sounds good and on paper, but it's just undoable in real life, like socialism, like other ideologies do. It sounds great, but people tend to think, how are you going to live with that? How am I going to do that in real time, in real life? And one thing that has worked for me as well, at least, is to put numbers in perspective. For example, the other day I was doing some research for a presentation, and I found out that the Australian government, just one dependency in the Australian Ministry of Health, spends around $12 million a year on licensing. That's just one office in one ministry in one country, and that's $12 million. So when you're talking health, that's both for NGOs and for countries. Can you imagine how many people you could treat with those $12 million? How many hospitals you could build? How many pills you could buy a year, let's say for diabetic or hypertensive patients that are chronic diseases you have to treat every single day? How much you could do with that money instead of allocating it and paying just a licensing fee? And they're using the software from Oracle that does not do half of what GenuHealth does nowadays. So those numbers, I think, are a good way of putting people into perspective and saying, hey, it's not just what I believe in as a floss advocate. It's a real thing. This is a reality you're facing right now. It's not, I mean, some countries can afford that. I was looking into numbers from the UK that are a little bit higher than that. And it's okay. If you can afford that as a government, that's fine. But if you're facing, if people are protesting against a very ineffective healthcare system, and you say you cannot allocate more money for that, how come you're spending $12 million in licensing fees? So that's an approach that has helped me at least get my point across.
Well, yeah, I know you from the open source perspective, especially for something that's as complex as a medical information system. You're spending money. You're spending the $12 million anyway for licensing fees. But then on top of that, you're also spending a lot of money for your IT department to customize it, because nothing out of the box ever works the way you want it to. And if I'm thinking, by saving the $12 million, you could hire 100 customization programmers that all I do is full time adapt GNUHealth to be exactly the system they want it to be, and contribute the pieces back, and it would be, and it wouldn't even be a drop in the bucket against that $12 million.
And even if you get to customize it, that's a really painful process for both parties. Even when you get to customize it, it's not even your software. You eventually, if the company, I don't know, dissolves or another corporation buys it, you lose the right over your own product. That with Floss System, it's your own thing, it's your own baby. And no matter who is in charge of the project, from either the government or us as GenuHealth workers, whatever you want to call us, it's still your baby, your product, and you can do whatever you want with it. And if at some point you want to just cross away a couple of modules, you can do that. If you want to eliminate a whole part of the system, you can do that. You cannot do that with a private system, because you, first of all, yes, you have to pay again those $12 million or more for an IT department to eliminate those modules or to customize them again. And that's one thing that I really, it gets my skin boiling, because it's just, I don't know. As I said, in businesses, you can, if you can afford it, okay. But there are some things in health that you can, just can't negotiate with. Another thing is that updates, for example, let's talk updates. One of the things we decided to break ties with OpenERP is that at some point they were not only charging for updating to a new version, but if you wanted to update from software version 1.1 to 1.2, you had to send them your database and they will update it for you and send it back to you. And as a CEO from whatever company, that gets me thinking. But when you're dealing with health records, you can view data as a commodity, in terms that it just, whatever data, it's the same. Every data is sensitive. And when you're dealing with healthcare system, with health records, that's just as sensitive as it gets in data. That says, here in Argentina, I couldn't use OpenERP because sending my database to somewhere else is just not only wrong, ethically speaking, but it's illegal, downright illegal. So that's another thing that I really push for people to go with flawless alternatives in health, well, everywhere, but especially in healthcare systems, because it's your data and you really have to protect it. As a patient, I wouldn't be comfortable knowing that my health records are just floating around somewhere in some server in Holland and then back to Belgium and then back to my country or something like that.
So along those lines, one of the big things that we have in the U.S. Around healthcare is laws and requirements like HIPAA and similar things. How does GNU Health kind of handle privacy when it comes to patient records?
Well, we have a very strict privacy module specific in GNU Health and access modules, actually. Not everyone can have access to everything in the system, and that's up to the institution if physicians or nurses or if you're an administrative staff person, you will have access to different things. So it's actually very few people who have access to health records. And even in that case, the institution owns the server where, or usually owns the server where the information is allocated. I'm talking, for example, the Jamaican case. Everything in that project is actually right now loaded in Jamaican jurisdiction, under Jamaican jurisdiction, in the Ministry of Health in our case, because that's the main authority in healthcare there. But let's talk, it's a small hospital. You have your own server and your data is going to be on that server. We, as GNU Solidario or Thimbra or another GNU Health company, we don't own your data. We don't want to own it because it's health data and you're entitled to have it. And we are never going to ask you to send your database somewhere to update it because that's just downright wrong. But privacy here, well, the good case or the good fortune for us was that we started here in Argentina, and one of the strongest legislations are here. Argentina has very serious problems in their law system, but at least in the privacy part, they're very, very careful about it. So, well, we try to keep it first that institutions should own their data. That's non-negotiable for us. So we wouldn't go that far as to asking you to share your data. And for example, when you log in with GNU Health, every person that interacts with it has their specific user, and by law or by consent, you have to sign a consent form, and you're not allowed to share your user. Actually, that's one of the things here in Argentina that got us recognized in front of the Ministry of Health, the local Ministry of Health, as a suitable software solution. We had doctors, physicians sign a consent form that whatever they sign or they prescribe in their medical records was as valid as writing it on paper, as valid as putting their signature on a file. So, oh, here. Yes. And we had them sign this consent form. And after collecting all those consent forms, the Ministry of Health passed a specific bill that allowed GNU Health to operate on this soil. So that is one thing. Now, the validity of the digital signature, the digital processes that go on have to be backed by the health institution in our case and different justice institutions in the country. And one other thing is that once the doctors signed that in this consent form, they were also aware that they weren't allowed to share any other user information, and that whatever happened there was their responsibility. So people started being more careful with what they do. If I start working in healthcare center A today, and 2 months from now I stop working there and go to another healthcare center, my user is downright deactivated, and our new user is created for the person that will replace me. And in the Jamaican case, the GNU Health will be functioning in a couple of years in the whole healthcare system. Even though I'm working within the healthcare system, the public healthcare system in that country, I would still have to create a new user for the new healthcare facility so that there are specific records of what has been done with my user during the time I work at your institution and what is going to be done after I start working for the new institution. And that is one of the precautions we try to take.
So along with the privacy issues and kind of what you were alluding to with the, like if you were to change institutions and you would get a whole new user, how does that work with if with the notion of GNU Health in a distributed setup? Is it possible for multiple institutions to share the data so that, like, if a patient goes to one institution, they can easily go to another institution and all their data is there?
Well, in a case like the Jamaican one, that we're going to be working in one whole country under one system, because when you're dealing with private healthcare, it's a bit difficult because each institution works apart. So if your hospital has nothing to do with my hospital, then there's no reason why you should have access to my data. Unless, of course, there is a special request by my physician that he needs my medical records. Blah, blah, blah. In Spain, for example, they're working on this, you know, bank wrist that has a specific chip there, and you just swipe that chip, and that has specific information about your, what in the U.S. would be like the social security number, and with that number you can access a patient's medical records within a certain network of health facilities, but not everyone. In our Jamaican case, since we are working under the same legal jurisdiction, that's the whole public healthcare system, ideally is that at one point we will get there where a patient in the west region of Jamaica will be able to go to the northern region and get treated there, and his records will be available there. But again, only by medical request. It's not that I, as an admission staff attendant, can just randomly pull some patient's records there and start looking them or sharing them. It's just by medical request. And that's the same way that it works nowadays with regular paper files. So there's nothing really changing there, besides, of course, the digital infrastructure that it's allowing me to just send a digital request and my records will be pulled from another database. In our case in Jamaica, doing some like down to earth model. We have one for the time being. We have been working now with them since last year. We have four pilot hospitals, one in each region. Jamaica is divided into four jurisdictions in terms of health authorities, plus the Ministry of Health that manages like the central part of the country. So ideally, we will have like five main databases, one in each pilot hospital, and the big mother database or the big main system located in the Ministry of Health. And well, Jamaica is an island in the Caribbean that is unfortunately exposed to a lot of natural disasters. So yes, our infrastructure is meant to work. I like to compare it with electrical staircase, that when there's electrical power, it works great and it really goes a long way in helping you facilitating some of the daily processes of going upstairs. But even without power, it still works as a staircase. So with that metaphor, the idea is that a patient in the southwest region can go to the east region and get treated there. But again, privacy, there's a central database and every process is located and is recorded in the central database in the Ministry of Health. But then it really depends on what region I'm treated in and whether my records are pulled from another database or not. And as I said, that model has nothing contradictory with how it works nowadays with regular paper files. So from that point of view, we will not be inflicting any damage on any privacy aspects or nothing that is not going on nowadays. Actually, it's better because nowadays with paper files, you cannot have such a strict record as to who pulls what file from where at what time and with what purposes. You do leave some sort of paper trail in GNU Health in the Triton system. You know what user at what point, at what time, in what health center, in what region logged and pulled files from what database. So actually, it gives you more control over the different operations that go on in your system.
Oh, sorry. Mute switch. Hey, mute switch. Okay, Gabriella, it's been really wonderful having you on. We could talk for hours, but unfortunately my showtime is limited, including my live slot. So we'll have to say thank you for being on the show and being such a wonderful guest.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me, actually.
So that was Gabriela Brenes talking to us about GNU Health. But let's go ahead and bring on our second expert, real expert in GNU Health, not that she wasn't, Louise Falcon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Very cool. And you're still speaking to us from the same place that Gabriela is. So I won't bother asking that question. Gabriela went into a little bit of the history of the project. Can you sort of give it from your perspective? Because you were sort of there on the ground right at the beginning, right?
Yeah, GNU Health started back in the early 2000 as an urge to provide rural health professionals something that they can work with the public health sector. So when we started to go in rural areas like Argentina or Africa, I felt like we needed to do something with computers and put that information, actually, let's say the other way, let's put that data into information and mix our knowledge on computer science and in health informatics and putting them together and give them as a tool for the health professional in those areas.
And what was the existing, I'm sure there's a lot of systems out there already to do that. Were there any open source systems that would help you with that kind of information, health information?
Well, yeah, before we started the project, I looked around. I looked around and certainly, OpenMRS was around. And there were certain different medical records, but I didn't see something that could deal with the health institution itself, and also the the management of the health center. Dealing with health professionals, dealing with lab, dealing with imaging, and so on. And the at the end, I also wanted to have all that information that we have collected for all those months, weeks, years, whatever, and give that and aggregate that so the health officials, now we are not talking about the patient, we are not talking about the health institution, we are talking about the health ministry, to be able to aggregate the information from different places and improve their health promotion and disease prevention campaigns. So, before starting something, a project like this, as big as this, you look around. The idea is if it already exists, might as well just use it. Don't get yourself into what it means to start a health information system or a hospital information system. So yeah, there are nice projects like OpenMRS, and they fit definitely very well on what is the electronic medical record. For that it's fantastic, but I felt that we need to also take care of the ERP part. And then OLAP, it's something that we can work with all that data collected and improve our health campaigns.
And so in the beginning, it was just a few things that were managed, and now it's organically grown to something that's, almost top to bottom, left to right, everything you need for a small medical clinic all the way up to a large hospital. Did you envision it going that far?
Not really. Reality is, again, when I started, it's like, okay, I need to provide this to small primary care centers. That was the idea. And that is still my main goal, meaning health, it's about basic things. You need to work on primary care, and you need to work on healthy population, and you need to prevent people getting sick. Now, if we reach that point, that's why I always say we need to work on people before working on patients. So if we get that point achieved, I will be very happy. As a general practitioner, that's the key part on health. Then, unfortunately, many times you won't get that, and you would get people that is sick, and then you have to take care of that part of the population. But again, health has health has a lot to do with the socioeconomic determinants of health, the lifestyle. And that's why demographics has a lot to do with this. I always say, you know, work on healthy population first. Let's do campaigns. Let's take all this data that we have, go reach the people, you know, educate people, and then from there go to the subset that should be much smaller on disease population. But the beginning was I need to provide something to a primary care center that deals with the small population. Now it has become a hospital information system, which of course I'm very happy. And also, as I said, a health information system, meaning we can aggregate all that information and put it in the hands of the health officials in the Ministry of Health.
I understand that some countries are already on board in deploying this in a rather large scale. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking with the community these days saying, okay, how should we map where is actual GNU Health being implemented? Many times you get people like now we know some hospital in Mexico is installing it, and there is a consulting company putting there. In Peru, they've been doing it. We are working actually in Argentina, in a province level hospitals. They are doing also implementations in Laos. I just came back from Laos to see that implementation going on with the Ministry of Health. Institution. The reality is it's hard to know. We are working also in Kenya. Now there is another project in Mozambique. It's hard to know actually how many health centers have health. And there is a project now to actually map those provinces and map those countries that are actively involved. If we take, for example, the Transifex project on localization, we have over 80 languages where GNU Health is being translated. So that would give you an idea on the extension of the project, kind of like mapping languages with geographical areas. But it's very hard. It's very hard to know. And I'm happy to like it's like that. You know, people has the freedom of using it and downloading and installing it, and you know, give us feedback on how is going on. But yeah, it's the nature of it. It's making it widely available on different places around the world.
Well, that does actually lead to my next technical question, which is what kind of a platform do I need to run this? Like, let's say I have a small clinic, a dentistry or something like that. Would I just need a single server, a PC or something running Linux, obviously, I presume. Is that all I would need for this?
Yeah, I always recommend to start small. I mean, today's computers, desktop computers, they have a lot of processing power. So might as well just start with a single database, where of course you will have your daily backups and you know all this high availability and stuff like this in place, and then if you start getting low of resources because you have many patients and many transactions per second, that means that you're doing a great job and might as well go for a larger platform, but you know, regular PC, regular backup system. The idea is we also use this type of infrastructure, so you don't spend a lot of money in costly equipment where you don't really need to. And then since it's client server, you just need, you know, the desktop PCs, clients around the health center, and you should be all set. And yeah, we highly recommend to use free software in both servers and clients, although the client exists in different platforms that are like Microsoft Windows or Apple. Of course, I recommend to use everything on free software. So any free operating system will work just fine.
And so I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that this is an official GNU project. What was the relationship there? How did that start? And what does it mean for you and the rest of us?
Well, it means a lot. I was very happy to hear that Mr. Richard Stallman dubbed the project and made it an official GNU project several years ago. It means that you don't really have to, I mean, that the Free Software Foundation, the GNU guys, gave us all the infrastructure to put the Mercurial server, to put the web page, to put, I mean, they host basically everything there. And they gave us the tools, and I can rest easy knowing that that has mirrors all over the world, and that they give us that infrastructure. And the reason of making it also part of GNU will give you the tranquility that no private company is going to get it and then make some sort of lock-in situation. And that's why GNU Solidario is behind it. GNU Health is a project for the people and by the people. And the main idea is to preserve public health informatics. And that's why when you know that GNU is behind it, it gives you the peace of mind that that's in good hands.
So looking at the GNU Health website, I see there's a number of commercial companies that are kind of listed, a number of commercial companies and organizations, one of which is Thimbra. Can you talk a bit about the relationship between GNU Health and those companies?
Yeah, definitely. And my idea is the more companies that offer services around GNU Health, the better. We need to have, also private companies. We need to have academia. We need to have state involved in this kind of projects, because that would give you the business model to go around and give a sustainability. Any project or any company that is listed on the GNU official site, they have to sign what we call the GNU Solidario Social Contract. That is basically similar, like Debian Social Contract or this type of document that binds you on some ethical points that are crucial for the project and for the people that is going to be installing, and most importantly, for the people that is going to be using the system. That means, like, for example, you have to always use free software, that you cannot get into any locking situation with your health centers where you are installing it, that you are going to get feedback and contribute to the project in different ways, you know, promotion, giving workshops, etc., etc. So the people that says, okay, I want to give services around GNU Health have to bind and convey to those norms that exist on the GNU Solidario social contract. Because one of the things that really, really makes me fearful of what has happened in the so-called open source community is that people is using the umbrella of open source to lock people in. And that is that's plain wrong, and that's unethical. And we have to put a stop to that. And, you know, health is, it's a very serious business, and you don't play with the people health and the community health. So by doing this sort of social contract, you kind of minimize the risk of the people that is going to be offering services around GNU Health are going to convey to those rules stated on the GNU Solidario social contract.
Okay. So I would imagine that it takes quite a bit of resources to develop GNU Health. How is the project funded currently?
Oh, very, very little. I would love to have more funds. We would all love to have more funds. In my particular case, this has become pretty much a full-time job. We have fundings from some companies that will allow us to do workshops, like in the case of the international workshop on emerging economies. They will fund, they will, you know, give you some travel funds and things like this. But we don't really have companies saying, okay, we are going to provide you with economical means to sustain the project. It's a global project. People working on the academia, people working on the state, people working on NGOs like GNU Solidario put their time and effort on that. GNU Solidario gets some donations from mainly people like you and I, that they donate to the GNU Solidario. But far from having a lot of fundings, and I wish that would change. We have the links on the GNU Solidario and the health homepage, you know, requesting for some support. If you download the system and you like it, might as well, you know, give us some support. But that that is always not as much as we would love to. And so if you have any ideas on how to improve that, most welcome to tell us.
Can you speak a bit about the Triton application and how it relates to GNU Health?
Yeah, well, Triton, it's the, I would say, it's the framework where GNU Health is developed. It's a free software project also. And the most important part is the ERP part. So basically, many objects on GNU Health, many models on GNU Health, they are mapped to business processes. So when you deal with beds, you are dealing with products where they have suppliers, they have price, they have stocks, they have stock. So you can do all the procurement, you can do all the requests, you can do all the sales and anything that has to do with the day-by-day business operation is done with Triton. Triton is its program with on Python, and GNU Health is again, let's say, mostly a set of Triton modules. Again, why we chose Triton? It's because it gives you the a libre framework that allows us to rest easy on that sense. It's a community-based project, meaning you don't have a company behind it. You have a community, and that's very important. You know, similar to Postgres and so on. So we tend to stay away from projects that they belong to a company, regardless on the license that they use. Because at the moment that you belong to a company and not to a foundation or to a community, then, you know, you might be at risk of having this sort of buyouts or locking situations that we all have to stay away from. And that's why we chose Triton, and so far so good.
So as far as like contributing code to the GNU Health, how large is the community, and how much, like, how many contributions have you received since the project started?
Well, we get a lot of contribution in different ways. We get contribution from documentation. We get contribution from code. We get contribution from translation. We get contribution from localization. And many times we get contribution just by giving you ideas. It comes to me like, WHO, for example, we use a lot of standards coming from WHO, like the ICD-10 disease coding or the medical procedures. People from the British NHS, they've been giving us a lot of ideas on the therapeutics and inpatient and hospitalization. Andrew Gledhill, it's from the NHS, and he's been helping us a lot there. People from the Triton community, it's been also working on things such as, you know, creating the PP packages so people can download GNU Health as a module. So you get a lot of feedback now. For example, I just got back from Spain, from a hospital nearby Madrid, where they gave us, we worked together. They gave us ideas on how to deal with paper-based records, where you have the patient history on paper and you need to scan that, and how to know what's that status and location and so on. So you get feedback, and you get code, and you get translations and different things from many people around the globe, which makes it very, very richful in that sense.
Wow, we're almost out of time, and this has just been a wonderful conversation. We're going to have to bring you guys back maybe in another year and kind of give an update or something. I could have asked another dozen questions. I want to ask one question, which is, are there any questions we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
No, well, I just, it came to my mind the concept of standards. That's I would say, the next big thing on the next version, on 2.6, that we're dealing with. HL7 Fire, we will use this standard, this new standard, to communicate heterogeneous system with a GNU Health server and GNU Health server to another servers that use this HL7 standard, which is it's quite important in this global world.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. You're obviously a man of vision and also a man of many practical talents. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Randall, for having me, and talk to you soon.
Very good. So that was Luis Falcon representing the GNU Health Project, actually being the head honcho for it, and obviously a very, very sharp guy. I am jealous. What do you think, Gareth?
I think it's an amazing project. I would definitely encourage the listeners to go make a donation to it, because I think it's one of those really important pieces of software that could really, if given the chance, could change the world.
Yeah, and we didn't get a chance to talk about the usual sort of what kind of contributors do you need and stuff, but I imagine they need translators, they need people who are domain experts, they need Python programs, obviously, to work with the Triton framework. But go to health.gnu.org. It looks like a pretty organized website in terms of being able to download it, install it, and get it set up with your system, especially if you have any sort of, I don't know, social motive, I guess, to have the world be healthier, which is not a bad moral to have.
No, definitely not.
Definitely cool. Cool. Well, like I said, we ran out of time. Otherwise, we would have asked a bunch more questions. But we do have some upcoming guests to also chat with for our limited amount of time, the usual hour slot that I get for this. CoreOS is coming on next week. That's Linux for massive server deployments. C-File, after that, is the next generation open source cloud storage. And since my last show, we've added three new guests. So as long as I keep adding one or two guests per show, we won't run out of people to talk to. But I've added Connections. I don't know how to pronounce that. That's all about open source education. Haven't gotten the details of that yet, but they're scheduled on our slots coming up soon. Also, just added a few hours ago, we talked to, I didn't write his name down, the Jitsi guy, the guy that does the open source communication software, the VoIP stuff. He's just got a new range of projects out called JitMeet and Jitsi Video Bridge that essentially can replace Google Hangouts with Jitsi talking to multiple screens, which is going to be really fascinating. In fact, maybe we can start using that for Floss Weekly, if it's finally come along a little bit further than last time we were there. Also just added, I'm excited about this, the Digital Public Library of America. This is dp.la. What they do is they're essentially indexing metadata for all the other online digital libraries that are out there. So you can say, search for a picture of the Eiffel Tower, and it has, this is what I'm thinking from reading the website, and it'll come up with the pictures of the Eiffel Tower, but it'll be links to like where it is on the Internet Archive or any of these other sort of open source and publicly open libraries all around the world. So sort of like a meta librarian. That should be really exciting as well. Again, I'm continuing to schedule Q2, so you'll see more announcements as we keep adding more people. So got a flurry of mail going out, waiting for people to come back and put schedules things in. You can follow that at the spreadsheet that's linked from twit.tv/floss. There's the homepage for the show. We've got a link from there to our big Google spreadsheet for that. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus, where I announce new guests as I add them. And you can also, that is bridged over to Floss Weekly, the Twitter handle. So you can follow us there as well. We do have a live chat room. We took a couple of questions from the chat room this week. That's at live.twit.tv. We normally tape 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. Currently GMT minus 7 because we're in summertime here. In fact, from the chat room, I want to also thank our buddy E2JK. I don't know his real name because it's not in front of me, but he, in fact, is the one that brought us GNU Health, and I appreciate him for that. So you can follow me on Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter, but more likely you'll see me as Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. So I've got one more show here at Captain Neil's house, and I'm off to Turkey for a couple weeks, so I'll have the show in the careful hands of a couple of our co-hosts as I book those in. Also, if you're a fan of Coding 101, it's a brand new show on the Twit Network. I've been invited to be a guest on the show next week, so watch for me there. Gareth, anything you want to plug?
I'm going to plug a, well, I mean, I can't, it's way too early to start plugging Scale now. But I'm going to plug a Scale-like show. It's actually a show that was inspired by Scale. It's the Texas Linux Fest. They have their call for papers. It ends on April 5th. So if anyone is interested in submitting a paper for that talk or for that conference, I'd highly encourage people to do that and also attend, because it's an awesome conference. It's very Scale-like, very community-oriented, and just a ton of fun. So. Website, TexasLinuxFest.org, I believe, is their site.
Yeah, I've spoken there, I think, once or twice, or maybe just covered it for Floss. I can't remember anymore. It's been such a blur for every conference I go to. But thanks for inviting me out to Scale, too. That was a lot of fun. So it was very cool. And thanks, Gareth, again, for being a co-host for this week. And I'm sure we'll see you again on a future show. And
Definitely. Well, thanks for having me.
Okay. And we'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.